All glories to Simul devotees. All glories to Simul devotees. All glories to Simul devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasad Vatale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Kanamani Namaste Sarasvati Gaura Anivichani Nirvishesh Srinivari Pasutati Sita. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. We're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 8, The Prayers by Queen Kunti, Text 41. Ata vivesha vishvatman.
Ata vivesha vishvatman.
Vishvamurtes vakeshume. Sneha pashamimam chindi.
Sneha pashamimam chindi.
Dridham pandushu vrishnishu.
Dridham pandushu vrishnishu.
Ata vivesha vishvatman. Vishvamurte svakeshume.
Vishvamurte svakeshume.
Sneha pashamimam chindi.
Sneha pashamimam chindi.
Dridham pandushu vrishnishu.
Dridham pandushu vrishnishu.
Ata vivesha vishvatman.
Vishvatman.
Vishvamurte svakeshume.
Vishvamurte
Sneha pashamimam chanti. Dridham pandushu vrishnishu.
Vishvesha Vishvatmanam
Atta Vishvesha
Atah. Therefore.
Vishva
Isha. O Lord of the universe. Vishva Atman. O soul of the universe. Vishva Murte. O personality of the universal form. Svakeshu. Unto my own kinsmen. May my Sneha Pasham. Tie of affection. Imam. This. Chindi. Cut off. Dridham. Deep. Pandushu. For the Pandavas. Vishnishu. For the Vishnis also. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. O Lord of the universe, soul of the universe, O personality of the form of the universe, please, therefore, sever my tie of affection for my kinsmen, the Pandavas and the Rishnis. Purport, Srila Prabhupada. A pure devotee of the Lord is ashamed to ask anything in self-interest from the Lord. But the householders are sometimes obliged to ask favors from the Lord, being bound by the tie of family affection. Srimati Kunti Devi was conscious of this fact, and therefore she prayed to the Lord to be cut off the affectionate tie from her own kinsmen, the Pandavas and the Vrishnis. The Pandavas were her very own sons, and the Vrishnis are members of her paternal family. Krishna was equally related to both of the families. Both the families required the Lord's help because both were dependent devotees of the Lord. Srimati Kunti Devi wished Sri Krishna to remain with her sons, the Pandavas, but by doing so, her paternal house would be reft of the benefit. All these partialities troubled the mind of Kunti, and therefore she desired to cut off the affectionate tie. A pure devotee cuts off the limited ties of affection for his family and widens his activity of devotional service for all forgotten souls. The typical example is the band of six Goswamis who followed the path of Lord Chaitanya. All of them belonged to the most enlightened and cultured rich families of the higher castes. But for the benefit of the mass of population, they left their comfortable homes and became mendicants. To cut off all family affection means to broaden the field of activities. Without doing so, no one can be qualified as a Brahmin, a king, a public leader, or a devotee of the Lord. The personality of Godhead as an ideal king showed this by example. Sri Ramachandra cut off the tie of affection for his beloved wife to manifest the qualities of an ideal king. Such personalities as a Brahmin, a devotee, a king, or public leader must be very broad-minded in discharging their respective duties. Srimati Kunti Devi was conscious of this fact, and being weak, she prayed to be free from such bondage of family affection. The Lord is addressed as the Lord of the universe or the Lord of the universal mind, indicating his all-powerful ability to cut the hard knot of family affection. Therefore, it is sometimes experienced that the Lord, out of a special affinity towards a weak devotee, breaks the family affection by force of circumstances arranged by his all-powerful energy. By doing so, he causes the devotee to become completely dependent on him and thus clears the path for his going back to Godhead. Om Gyana Karanda Shakana Jana Salakaya Chaksur Namitamina Tasmai Shri Gurve Namaha Vanchako Patu Vishcha Kripa Sinnabhi Vichcha Patitano Pavanagyo Vaishnavi Namo Namaha. So Kunti, Queen Kunti, is conflicted. She, of course, is the mother of the Pandavas and has strong familial affection for them. And of course, they are in Hastinapur. But she is also related to the Vrishnis. She is the sister of Vasudeva. And of course, that whole part of the family is situated more in Dwarka. And Krishna is going to leave the Pandavas now and go and see the Vrishnis. So naturally, there's some conflict or there's some pulling between which would she like. Is she like to see Krishna benefit both sides of the family? So she says, better I just break all these family attachments. Krishna, just take these away from me. Let me just be purely absorbed in you. As she will state in the next verse, it's very clear what her very highly realized spiritual intention is. So at any rate, she concludes, better to just break family attachment and focus on Krishna. Now, the first question I had when I read this was, well, all of her relatives are great devotees. Why would it be a problem being attached to Arjuna or Vasudeva, eternal associates of Lord Krishna, absolutely pure devotees of the very highest caliber. And that's actually explained more in Prabhupada's purport tomorrow, but the gist of it is that he clarifies that this is material attachment to family. In other words, she didn't want to be attached to her family members because they were her sons or her brother or cousins or whatever, or her nephews or whatever it might be. But it was all right. She could certainly be attached to them as fellow spirit souls, fellow devotees, that they were all part of Krishna's family. And if those relationships became spiritual, then that is okay. In fact, Prabhupada says that attachment or service to the devotees is very much needed and valuable at times. So it's not that we want to cut off all relationships with devotees, but the idea here is to try to break the material attachment, which is based more on the specific physical relationship in this lifetime, in this body. So, of course, going back a step, we say, well, what's the big problem with attachment to life in this material world? And most devotees are pretty familiar with this, and we could summarize it in one word: suffering. The problem of the material world is suffering. And if you really look at the activities of the scientists, economists, health practitioners, what is the main thing, the goal that so many people are putting their energy towards? To try to alleviate suffering in the material world, right? Material world is filled with suffering, so much of the activity is how to alleviate some of that suffering, and then conversely, of course, to increase the enjoyment. Now, that motive may be good. I mean, who wants suffering? You know, we want to help people where we can. We don't want to see anybody suffer materially, spiritually, emotionally, in any way. But the problem is that the material scientists and others are usually unsuccessful. As far as I can see, the material scientists have done one good thing. They came up with air conditioning here in Florida. After that, it's a very small list. Prabhupada gives an example. He calls it Maya Sukhaya. And then he talks about, and this is in the seventh canto in the teachings of Prahlad Maharaj, that sometimes what we think is going to be beneficial turns out against us. And Prabhupada gives the example of the automobile. Great, we have cars now. You know, you can go very fast to go many places. But then we have pollution, we have, you know, so many things. We have wars over the oil to supply those cars with. So you could go on and see that we unwittingly cause so many problems in the name of progress or science. I was thinking today, I follow, for some reason, I have some attachment to it. I follow the weather very closely. And I've been watching the hurricanes, and there's one that's going up the coast and up towards New Orleans. And I was saying, they have like what they call these spaghetti models, where they have 20 different possible tracks of where the hurricane. I mean, the scientists basically cannot even really predict a hurricane. They can to some degree, but not completely. And they always change. And you know, like the one that was supposed to hit Florida and stalled over the Bahamas for 3 days and never even came to Florida. So with all of their science, and it's very developed science they have, they can't even predict hurricanes, what to speak of stopping them or controlling them or preventing the terrible loss of life, the impact of natural calamities like weather. So we're very limited in our degree to control, our degree to alleviate suffering and to bring about happiness. But at the same time, everyone in this material world is assaulted by material desires. So naturally, there's going to always be this need to try to eliminate suffering. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, there's a verse 10.20.42, it says, the autumn moon relieved all creatures of the suffering caused by the sun's rays, just as wisdom relieves a person of the misery caused by the identity with his material body. So in a nutshell, bodily identification is a cause of suffering. And it's described, I think it was in the 11th canto, I remember we were talking about it, there's one verse by saying how suffering is experienced in the senses, the mind, the intelligence, and the false ego. Basically everything. in all ways within the gross and the subtle body, we experience suffering in so many different ways. So we attempt to find happiness and alleviate suffering. Now, getting to our theme today of relationships and family affection, usually we attempt to find happiness through relationships with others. This is very natural. In purport, Prabhupada says, the nature of every living being is to make friends with others and to offer his love to a suitable person. This is natural. This is what everybody in the material world tries to do. And we see that those who are alone are rarely happy. People who are loners or social misfits or whatever, unless there's some avaduta, the Avanti Brahman or Jed Barak or someone like that, who has so fixed in transcendence that they have no need for relationships with anyone or anything at all. But most people, they're hermits they're considered loners. They're portrayed as very disturbed or unhappy. I was thinking a good example of this was Ted Kaczynski. Does anybody remember that name? No.
Yeah.
Yeah. What was he also known as?
The Unabomber.
Probably more of you heard of that. This, I don't know when this was, 15, 20 years ago? He used, one of his practices was to put bombs in mail packages and send them, I guess, to people he had grievances against and try to blow them up in the mail. He was finally caught by the FBI or whatever. But one thing about Ted Kaczynski is he lived alone in a cabin for like 10 or 15 years, never saw anyone, no relationships. He was so totally antisocial. And the extreme of that was not only being antisocial, but wanting to murder people that he didn't like. So people need relationships, even just to be psychologically healthy in this material world. And people often find their greatest happiness in relationship. If you ask most people what their source of happiness is, more people say it's their family or their relationships than they will how much money they made. Even for a materialistic society like this, people really value relationships as much as they do just having so many, you know, things and goods and material objects. And so that's a very natural thing. But the problem is that material relationships are, by their very nature, imperfect. They will cause some happiness, and they also cause distress. Everybody knows, very familiar statistic, I'm not sure what it is now, I used to keep track of these closely when I was teaching these things, but about 45-50% of marriages end in divorce in America, and probably similar in other Western countries. People think, and nobody gets married thinking, oh, I'll probably get divorced, right? When the people are there, you know, in front of the priest or the altar or the judge or whatever it is and saying I do, they're thinking this is going to be forever. This is the love of my life. This is, you know, the perfect person. This is Radha and Krishna, you know, that they're thinking. But it's not. She's not Radha and I'm not Krishna. You know, even though we would like to think this is going to be the perfect relationship that will complete us. And inevitably, one becomes disappointed that their partner is flawed. It's natural. Now, if people are mature, they sort of work through that, and they realize that things are going to be imperfect, and, you know, they form some relationship, and half of them can work it out and stay together. But it's natural to look for these relationships because it is part of who we are constitutionally. Our reality, our soul, is not something isolated, floating in the Brahma Jyoti. Our very being has relationship. Prabhupada describes this in many places, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Lila 1.156. Prabhupada talks about the five rasas, Shanta, Dasha, Vatsalya, and Madhurya. He says these are reflections of the rasas found in the material world. He says these five relationships in the material world are distorted reflections of the original pure sentiments which should be understood and perfected in relationship to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So because everyone has a relationship with God, a relationship with Krishna, as a friend, as a lover, as a son, as one's worshipful object, as the Supreme Personality of Godhead that one worships and adores, there's a relationship, and that's the original relationship. When we come into this material world, we still seek that relationship. But since we don't know Krishna, we look for it in other jiva souls. So it's a very natural process, and, you know, devotees can clearly understand this. So one becomes detached materially by becoming attached to Krishna. And one who's very advanced feels the presence of Krishna within his heart. And when one's more advanced, one sees Krishna face to face. And this enables one to become detached from material relationships. It's not an artificial thing. In fact, artificial detachment does not work. The native impersonalists who say, none of these things are real, only Brahman is real, it doesn't work.
Even if someone could achieve this, which in Kali Yuga is next to impossible, they want to perfect self-realization, complete self-realization by the processes of meditation or yoga. Even if one can do that, Prabhupada has described many times that a person cannot stay in that position. Just I am, just as consciousness, because our constitutional swarup is not just consciousness, but also relationship. We are Sat Chit Ananda. We are eternal, as one understands when one has Brahman realization, but one also has knowledge, the chit potency that one understands with Paramatma realization. And further, we are Ananda. We are blissful. Now, how does one become blissful? Again, we're back to relationships. When one is in relationship with God, in relationship with Krishna, then one becomes truly happy. Not materially happy, but spiritually happy. So our process of devotional service transforms that attachment from material to spiritual. Verse and purport from Bhagavad Gita 7:19. After many births and deaths, he who is actually in knowledge surrenders unto me, knowing me to be the cause of all that is. Such a great soul is very rare. Prabhupada says, when one is further advanced, he can understand their activities in spiritual life, and these activities constitute devotional service. Realizing this, he becomes attached to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and surrenders to him. At that time, he understands Krishna is all that is the cause of all causes. Srila Prabhupada says that, also in his purport, that if one is not able to break those attachments naturally, to help that devotee advance in Krishna consciousness, Krishna will sometimes force that devotee in a situation to renounce. So Kunti, you could say in one sense, was forced in the situation to renounce, although, you know, she was a great soul, a pure devotee, and she naturally... I'm not sure why Prabhupada says that she was calls her a weak devotee, maybe just because she's in a female body. I assume that's referring to that might not have the same kind of, you know, physical strength or ability. At any rate, we know that Queen Kunti is one of our, you know, she's on an all-time list, you know, greatest Vaishnavas, Vaishnavis. But at any rate, it's not that Krishna had to force her to renounce, but she understood. I have to give up all affection for all my material family affairs and just focus on Krishna. But if one is not as fortunate to have that deep realization inside as Mother Queen Kunti, sometimes Krishna makes arrangements for devotees. Now, these are all, of course, all great devotees, but I was thinking of some examples of this. Dhruva Maharaj, when he was a young boy, he was insulted by his stepmother. His father basically neglected him, took the side of the stepmother. So he broke his ties to family life because he couldn't tolerate it. The situation was intolerable, and of course he became self-realized and a great devotee. Narada Muni. Now, he was, of course, well on his way towards spiritual understanding because he had had the association of the Bhaktivedantas who taught him spiritual life, and he was able to take the remnants of their food. But then, what happened? His mother, was it 5 years old? His mother dies. Bitten by a snake, I think? I was trying to find it. I couldn't find where the description of that was. It wasn't in the first canto. But anyway, she was bitten by a snake, and he died. So he's alone. Krishna forced him, and he remembered. What were the instructions? So he, of course, meditates, he becomes enlightened, and then he becomes Narada Muni, one of the absolute greatest devotees, you know, confidential associate of Lord Krishna, kind of like forced in that circumstance. I was also thinking of Chitraketu. Chitraketu was so attached to his son, you know, that he had wanted for years and years and years, that Krishna made the arrangement that the son dies. And he's totally grief-stricken, so attached, material. Although he's a great devotee, but he was so attached. And then, of course, what happens? The son is revived, comes back to life, and preaches to him. And explains, I've been your son in different lifetimes, and you've been different fathers, but this is temporary. And he talks to him, of course, about the importance of devotional service and how everything according to his body is temporary. Chitraketu understands, and he becomes enlightened. Now, that seemed a little bit harsh, that the son he was so attached to, but that was part of, I think, the prophecy, wasn't it? Was it Agastya Muni or Narada Muni came, but there was another one.
Angira.
Angira Muni, thank you. you know, said that the sun will be the cause of your greatest happiness and greatest distress. So that was already foretold that that was going to happen. At any rate, Krishna may have to make these arrangements for devotees to help them become detached. So we want to reestablish a relationship with Krishna. Now, in the early stages of devotional service, as neophytes, we do not directly perceive our relationship with Krishna. We're not on the platform of those who are always with Krishna or always see Krishna within or who are eternal associates. So our spiritual relationships are actually first with devotees. We meet devotees, we associate devotees, we establish sadhu sangha. And, of course, one of our most important relationships is our relationship with our guru, with our spiritual master. That is the process of Krishna consciousness that Krishna outlines. So I was thinking that I can only speak for Srila Prabhupada disciples, that most of us, we had a vague understanding of the details of the philosophy when we first became very attached to Srila Prabhupada. And for many devotees, that was the main thing that kept us all as devotees, was our attachment to Srila Prabhupada on a very personal, I mean, not even if we had much association, it didn't matter. There was a connection, a personal spiritual connection, and every devotee that I know felt that. Or they didn't become devotees. So we really became devotees because of Srila Prabhupada. Now, I read Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita before I met Prabhupada, and I was pretty convinced of the philosophy, but how did I understand the philosophy? From Srila Prabhupada's purports. So that's association with Srila Prabhupada in the best way from hearing. And then when I saw Srila Prabhupada, absolutely convinced. Could barely understand what he was saying, but I knew that this was my guru. So the connection with the guru, the connection with the devotees is very, very important. Because devotee relationships are spiritual because Krishna is the center. Now, of course, we have material degrees to the degree that we're influenced by karma, jnana, and we have some material motive, but we want to establish a relationship with Krishna. So that's what we work towards. That's the process of sadhana. You know. Now, one thing I just wanted to point out is our primary our purpose is to reestablish a relationship with Krishna. But that doesn't mean here I am in the material world and I have all these material relationships. Now I finally become advanced, I finally become a pure devotee, I go to Gokula or Goloka Vrindavan, and here I am with Krishna. And there's these other people around me, but they don't really matter so much. It's mainly I have a personal relationship with Krishna. Now you do. Every single living being has a personal relationship with Krishna. There's so many stories that we read how every gopi thought Krishna was only dancing with her. Sometimes I was reading one the other day that when he's playing with the coward boys, you know, and everyone thinks he's doing something special with them. Or eating with him, or you know, every living entity does have that relationship with Krishna, but at the same time, they have relationships with one another. I was reading one of Shivaram Swami's books, Venu Gita. He has a series of three books that are all about Vrindavan pastimes, and they're very beautiful. And I was amazed the second time I read them through, but I didn't appreciate them as much, I think, the first time. They're wonderfully written. He's an incredible writer. And, you know, very poetic. And, you know, and they're very much in line with Srila Prabhupada. You know, he tries to, you know, make some of these pastimes accessible, but not like, you know, not overly intimate or overly familiar. He wants to make sure devotees don't take an overly familiar step. But at the same time, all the nectar of those relationships are there. And I was thinking at one point he was citing Ujjvala Nilamani by Rupa Goswami, which I haven't read and probably never will. But it's talking about how all the gopis have different moods and they have different orientations. And there's left-wing and right-wing devotees. There's ones like Lalita's camp who are very fiery, and ones like Chandravalis who are a bit more submissive, and Radharani's kind of in the middle, you know, and there's different groups according to what they call their bhavas, or their anubhavas, and they have different groups called yutas and subgroups called gunas. Now, what does all this mean? In other words, and it's explained that these are based upon those with similar moods, just like all of you probably have certain friends. Now, why aren't you equally friends with all devotees? Now, in one sense, we could say, yes, I am. I'm friends with everyone. Well, but in reality, we do tend to pick relationships with those of similar nature. Even amongst There's a room full of you. All of you are greatly advanced, except for me. All of you are greatly advanced devotees here listening to Srimad Bhagavatam. But I probably would tend to associate with some of you more than others just because of natural, you know, relationships and personality, whatever. So it's that way in the spiritual world. You know, different groups of gopis have different, and they're sort of like best friends. They're friends with all of them, but they're like best friends with a small group. Now, as far as if you want to know anything more about this, that's the total extent of my knowledge on the subject. It's way beyond my level of realization, so you'll have to ask somebody else. But my point is, in the spiritual world, the devotees talk confidentially. They embrace one another. They cry together. They have loving relationships with one another. What's the difference? Krishna is the center. Krishna is the center of all of that relationship. It's very beautiful and wonderful and heartrending, and you can say so many things. So in the spiritual world, devotees have variety, they have personality, different personal relationships with Krishna and with each other. So it's not that we deny relationship. We want to perfect relationship. We want to spiritualize relationships. So it's natural there's going to be affection, just as there's affection in families, due to common parents. Sometimes brothers and sisters are very close. You know, if you're fortunate to have a brother or sister who's a devotee, you know, it's a very wonderful thing. It's in your eradication, a sister. You know, it's so nice, isn't it? Having a sibling, I mean, I could be so fortunate, you know, have a sibling who's a devotee, and you have a natural relationship. So Krishna is the father of all of us, so we have a natural affection. We're all part of Krishna's family. And we devote, and we experience a spiritual safety in those devotee relationships. So we always want to associate with devotees. Now, some of you are thinking, I'm on my way to work right now, and I have to associate with many non-devotees all day. Yes, we do. We don't have contempt or hatred or disdain for people. Everyone is a living entity. Everyone is a devotee. They just don't know it yet. Some of them don't know they're devotees yet. And some of us are starting to begin to understand we're devotees. But how do we relate to them? Bhaktivinoda Thakur told us. He said, while we're associating with the non-devotees, we do not repose our affection. We don't give our heart. You save your heart for your relationship with devotees. Isn't that true? In other words, I used to go to work every day for many, many years. And, you know, I had people who were even like friends who were non-devotees, people I got along with, a couple of them even made vegetarians, you know. So, I mean, you know, you can have some influence on these people in a good way, and just that they can have a good respect for you as a devotee. And, oh, he's a devotee, and he's a pretty good person, you know. So that's fine. But I wouldn't say any of my close friends, deep friends. No, those close friendships are with devotees. So while we're in this material world, back to the material world, we have many duties. And we have many things we have to do just to keep body and soul together. And this is a nice purport. Srila Prabhupada says, we have two kinds of duties. He says, when a living entity is conditioned, we have two kinds of activities. One is conditional, and the other is constitutional. As for protecting the body or abiding by the rules of society and state, certainly there are different activities, even for devotees, in connection with conditional life. And such activities are called conditional. Besides these, the living entity is fully conscious of its spiritual nature and engaged in Krishna consciousness or devotional service to the Lord as activities which are transcendental. They are performed in his constitutional position and are called devotional service. So we have conditioned activities and we have constitutional. In the conditioned state, sometimes devotional service and conditional service in relation to body will parallel one another. And then again, sometimes these activities are opposed to one another. As far as possible, a devotee is very cautious that he does whatever he can not to disrupt his wholesome condition. So I thought this was a really nice description Srila Prabhupada gave, that we have two senses of duty. We have material duties in conditioned life, and we have our constitutional duty as a devotee of the Lord, which is our sadhana, our devotional practice, devotional service, etc. He says, so as much as possible, we want these things to be in parallel, not in opposition. So that's what we try to do. I mentioned this before in class, but you know, when I was, I don't know, many, many years or decades or centuries ago when I was in school, I remember in math class, they taught set theory, which I don't think they teach anymore. It's an old concept. And they talk about Venn diagrams. Sometimes in business, you see this still with Venn diagrams. A Venn diagram are sets, okay? And sometimes they overlap, and sometimes they don't. They're separate like that. Anyway, the idea is you see how two different groups of things interact. So conceive this Venn diagram we're going to do today. Conceive of two sets. This is devotional activities, constitutional activities. This is material activity, conditional activities, right? They have these two sets. Now, for a non-devotee, these devotional circle, the devotional circle is very small or non-existent, and everything's material. For a neophyte or beginning devotee, there's a beginning to overlap. There's some intersection where they're together. For a more advanced devotee, there's a very large overlap, and most of the activities one does align with Krishna consciousness. And for the pure devotee, there's a complete overlap. No separate interest. Everything is relationship with Krishna. Prabhupada once said, for a devotee, there's no public life and private life. It's all the same, right? Complete overlap. Everything is in connection with Krishna. So our goal, this is one way of looking at least at our goal of sadhana bhakti, is to increase the overlap of our constitutional activity set with our condition activity set. So we shouldn't see our duties, family life, as something separate. We don't want to keep them out here. We want to bring them together. So in Krishna consciousness, we begin our training with trying to see everything in relationship with Krishna. See how Krishna is behind everything, how everything can be used in Krishna's service, even our relationships. So we tend to want to engage everything as much as we can in Krishna consciousness. Now in the beginning, again, we engage according to our propensity. I like doing something, so if the management is smart, they engage me in that. If you're not so smart, and I have a PhD, and they say, well, what you should do is sweep the sidewalks for the next 20 years, this is not good management. Nothing wrong with sweeping the sidewalks. It could be pure devotional service. But in the beginning, we kind of tend to need to use our propensities, you know, what we do well, okay? You know, if you're, you know, if you're just really good at talking to people and convincing people of anything, like Mother Sukada, you send her out on Sankirtan to distribute books. She had a tremendous propensity for it, I know, because I went out with her on day one. Okay. Yes, I was embarrassed by her performance. Okay. I mean, I was embarrassed because she was so much better, is what I'm saying. Anyway, and I was supposed to be the Sankirtan leader. Okay, anyway, in the beginning, we do what we like to do, what we do for Krishna, and that's called dovetailing. Prabhupada has described this as dovetailing. Now, what's the meaning of the word dovetailing? It's actually a woodworking joint. You know, it's like, it kind of goes like this, that's the dovetail, and I have an old dresser from, I think, the 1880s or 90s that I picked up somewhere that has these kind of joints. You don't see them as much in modern furniture. It's all just stapled together, glued together or something. You know, but they have these nice dovetail joints. And what that means, the dictionary says, the dovetailing means to connect or combine precisely or harmoniously. And what it does, in other words, we have material desire, spiritual desire, we try to connect them together harmoniously, and it makes it stronger. It's a very strong joint. So in other words, you know, we can become strong in Krishna consciousness when we learn to use everything in Krishna's service. Now, with advancement, as one continues in devotional service, one doesn't look so much for, oh, what do I want to do, but what does Krishna want me to do? Or what does my guru want me to do? Looking more to fulfill the desires of the Lord, that's a very advanced devotee. So we want to understand the desire of Krishna, the guru, and that will give us a deeper happiness and strong faith in following God's desire and understanding God's desire, how? Through the instructions of the guru. Okay. So, we want to connect everything with Krishna. What's the best way to do that? Well, Srila Prabhupada gives us some examples of devotees who gave up family life, like the six Goswamis and others. And he said what they did was they devoted their life to spreading Krishna consciousness. And how is the best way to do that, the best process of connecting everything and everyone and others? Through the process of chanting Hare Krishna. In the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the Adi Purana is quoted, by singing, Krishna says, by singing my names, a person will attain a position close to me. I make this promise, that person, O Arjuna, purchases me. Through singing my names, through chanting the names of Krishna, one becomes very close to him. And I was reading recently in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, Sanat Goswami was talking about how difficult it is to attain Krishna Prema. It takes many lifetimes and much austerity, etc., etc. Practically nobody can become a pure devotee. He said, but, because of Lord Chaitanya, those who are in the Sankirtan movement, those who are chanting the names of God, he said, can very easily become advanced and very easily attain Krishna and go to Goloka Vrindavan by chanting the names of God. So, advanced devotees, we see, often give up family responsibilities to spread Krishna consciousness throughout in the world through Sankirtan. Our prime example, Srila Prabhupada, who gave up family life, became vanaprastha, and sannyas, and at an advanced age, Srila Prabhupada was, Srila Prabhupada was my age when he came to America. And while most of us are thinking about how we're retiring, he was thinking about how do I begin? How do I begin spreading Krishna consciousness, giving up everything, coming with nothing to a foreign country? So we have these wonderful examples of advanced devotees who are able to give up everything for the purpose of Krishna and spreading Krishna's movement. We may not be at that point, but as I said, we gradually begin to advance in Krishna consciousness. And how do we judge the results of our advancement? Very simple. How much am I becoming attached to Krishna, and how much am I becoming detached from material things? That's a very simple barometer of our spiritual progress. Okay. So, I should probably end there. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Any questions or comments? Yes, Mother Sugata.
You mentioned naturally, you know, so it's like, you know, if you're older, your parents are older, you're expecting they're going to pass, and you, even though it's very, very sad, it's not unexpected. On the other hand, like, you know, we see even examples in Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam, where, you know, Arjuna, Yudhishthira, they're so grief-stricken because, you know, these very close family members have our past, or the Brahmin who lost 7 kids, it wasn't like, okay, well, it's Krishna's arrangement. You know what I mean? It was like, whoa, what's going on? This shouldn't be happening. This is wrong. Mm-hmm. So, you know, oftentimes, especially in Kali Yuga, that occurs, you know, where something really devastating, you know, you lose someone very untimely, it seems, nothing happens to that. So, a couple of questions about that. One of them is, I guess, how to deal with it. And also, one question that comes up frequently when someone has, you know, lost a child or lost, you know, a family member or friend untimely, seemingly untimely, like, will I ever see them again? You know, will I ever, I don't know if Prabhupada ever said anything about that, or, you know, that when you ascend to the spiritual world, will you know, this is my son and this is my mother? Or maybe it doesn't matter because when you're completely purified and self-realized, you feel like that towards everyone. So anyway, just...
Yeah, I've thought about that myself a lot. That's a very good question, a very deep question. And, I mean, Srila Prabhupada did say we'll all be together in the spiritual world. Mm-hmm. He said we'll have another ISKCON in the spiritual world. I mean, I don't know if we're going to have an ISKCON society there in Goloka Vrindavan, you know, amongst the coward boys or the gopis or whatever. But yes. he meant we'll have association, you know, I think. Yeah. That, you know, so why not? I mean, why won't we? Why not that we'll be together? I'm assuming that we'll be somewhere with Srila Prabhupada. We'll be part of that. I mean, I'm just speculating at this point. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember Prabhupada specifically stating that, because sometimes Prabhupada said that when one goes to the spiritual world, your memory of being in the material world is kind of like a dream. Yes. You know, it's kind of a fuzzy dream. Oh yeah, I remember that was, you know, more like a nightmare probably, you know. Yes. That was kind of a bad experience. So, you know, there may be some knowledge of that, you know, from what Prabhupada indicated. I don't know, I was thinking this, well, it was special. The thing is, it's hard to say because some, I was thinking like in the Briya Bhagavatamrita, Gopal Kumar, you know, he obviously remembered everything. He goes to Golok Vrindavan and he knew everything and where he'd been and who he'd been. But I don't know if that was a very special circumstance, you know, for the purpose of writing that spiritual literature. Anyone have any insight on this? If you know anything that Srila Prabhupada said or anything from the scriptures? Because I don't remember.
Yeah.
Well, the question was, we may have close relationships here with devotees or whatever, our family members. And then when we go back to Godhead, when we go to Goloka Vrindavan, will we still have relationships with those people or know them or even know who they are, remember them, or do we just have a whole different set of relationships? And that's the question. What do you think?
In relation to the grief, I mean, how to understand it when someone's suffering because of...
You know, because, you know, it's like I know that like the Christians would always say, we'll all be together in heaven. Well, maybe, maybe not. I think that's pretty optimistic. You know, but in other words, so how do we answer that? I have a personal feeling that many of us are eternal associates, but I don't know if I can really back that up. You, Prime Minister, any ideas?
No, I was thinking of the other way to look at it, that when Satsurup Maharaj asked the question, it's in the Vedavis, will I meet my god brother and sister when I arrive in spiritual world? And he was not sannyas that time because Mother Jodhurani's name is there in the letter.
Yeah.
If she's sick, don't make her pregnant. Something like that. So you can easily find it, that letter. And then in response to his question, Prabhupada writes, just like a birds of a feather flock together.
Birds of a feather flock together? Okay.
We all are flying towards spiritual sky by taking energy and support from each other, just like the birds, regular birds fly in the material sky. But then he put a question, he said, if one bird loses his wing, can other birds keep that bird flying? And he didn't answer yes or no. Mm-hmm. I was like thinking, what does that mean? It means if somebody commit offense or like,
falls down.
It falls down. It may not be like flying in the same speed.
Yeah.
So he said, you should think in that way. So those who are following Prabhupada strictly, they will be there and will meet there. But if those are not following or deviating, maybe later, I don't know.
Or it may take another couple lifetime or two.
Yeah.
You know, which in the face of eternity is very little.
I had one comment on your question, your beautiful explanation of Sivaram Maharaj's. Because many years back, maybe decades back, I was studying 10th Canto details a little more. And Sanatana Goswami Pad writes that when we see the pastime like Krishna going away, Akrura is taking Krishna Balaram away from the gopis, and we see the some gopis. It does not say, Sukhdev Goswami does not say who is doing what.
Yeah.
He says some gopi fainted, could not even bear the news that Krishna is leaving.
Yeah.
And some gopi just put themselves in front of the chariot and they're protesting and they're crying. And so every gopi is different. Mm. So they say, if you don't know the each group's mentality, how they form the group, and he gives the whole explanation how each group, it's such a fascinating, thinking that I feel like to jump and be dancing. Mm. It's so fascinating. So in order to release 10th Canto, it is necessary we need to dive. Why Mother Rohini acts in a way, Mother Yashoda acts in different way, Mother Devaki acts in different way. Because their relationship with Krishna in a particular mood, and they relish only in that mood.
Yeah.
That's why they act that way. And it's so beautiful, such a humorous pastime.
So what we understand, I think, is that that particular mood is part of our eternal sarup,
yes,
our constitutional position. And then we're naturally going to have this relation with Krishna, which is like there with us eternally. And therefore we will have relationships with others who may be in similar moods, although maybe not exact, have an exact experience. Right. Yeah. Yeah, makes a lot of sense. Yeah. Madhumati, Prabhu?
I probably shouldn't even say, because I don't know where I don't remember the comment, but the fact that you're saying that you think you have your feeling about that we are associates, eternal associates or whatever. I remember, I think it was in the Brihad Bhagavatamita reading, because we only do a couple of readings, and I think not in the Bhagavatam, but it's in the Brihad Bhagavatamita reading, something to the fact was stated there in the commentary, as far as I remember, about the families being together. Like there was some indication.
Oh, I remember that. I just reread it. I just read the book about a week or a month ago.
Yeah.
It was in Vaikuntha, I think. It was there. It was something about people who had attachments for their family life. They were, some of the Vaikuntha residents were mentioned like that, but their families were there in Vaikuntha in spiritual bodies.
Yeah, all together.
So it had to do pretty much with the desire of devotee. In other words, everybody gets kind of what they want. You know, once they're purified and they have pure love of Krishna, whatever their specific way that they want to manifest that, they're able to. And the other thing that's really interesting in that is some of the Vaikuntha residents could change their forms. And there were, and some of the, we just have no, I don't, we have no idea of the incredible power of the spiritual world and spiritual energy, and even within the jiva, because some of the Vaikuntha residents are also simultaneously in Goloka, and sometimes they come to Earth, and, you know, they mention that, like, Nanda Maharaj is eternally Nanda as Krishna's father. He's also Nanda in Vaikuntha. I think he's a guard or gatekeeper or something. And they said he's also a demigod. But remember his name? It starts with a B. Anyway, he's also a demigod. Same personality, one person. He's not, you know, I don't understand this, but I think it's a wonderful and amazing, and boy, I can't wait to get there and find out. Probably there's something to say when people start asking all these real details about what happens here, what happens here, what happens here. You should go there and find out. So that's what we need to do, purify ourselves so we'll learn. Oh, that's right. We might have a little over Lord Chaitanya. Wow. Pretty amazing, huh?
Yeah. Remember the past time of the body was taken in the airplane to Vaikuntha, but he doesn't want to remember his mother.
Oh, yeah, that was Dhruva. Dhruva Maharaj. He said, wait a minute, I'm not going to go unless you take my mother. And they say, oh, we already have another airplane bringing her.
Yeah, it's like a nice feeling also. Yeah.
That's true. But there was also affection, maternal affection, yeah. Okay, we should probably end here. Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Thank you for the very nice class. You mentioned you read Prabhupada's book before you met him, and then once you met him, you decided right away. So I feel I'm visualizing that moment when you met Prabhupada and you accepted him as a guru. So there must have been something in Prabhupada's personality itself which, you know, kind of attracted you. So my question is, obviously he was 60 years old, he came here to US. Why he was he did not make disciple when he was in India, was it, and why suddenly he had like 10,000 disciples here in US? Do you, and just want to get your thoughts on it about your guru. You know, is there anything happened in the voyage when he was coming here or something?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a couple of reasons. First of all, it's like sort of Lord Chaitanya's orchestrating, you know, the situation so that he would not be real successful. And he had a couple of disciples, you know, in Jhansi, like that. You know, and he had a few followers, you know, and a lot of people really appreciate it. It wasn't a big movement or anything. So he would come to the West and fulfill Lord Chaitanya's prophecy that the whole world would chant Hare Krishna in every town and village. So because Srila Prabhupada was fulfilling the prophecy and the direction of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his spiritual master, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, that arrangement was there that he became successful, not immediately, but eventually very successful in the West. Then, of course, it's interesting, isn't it, how he went back to India and the movement started growing and blossoming. Right now, Krishna consciousness, India is the place where Krishna consciousness is just, you know, expanding and booming. Hundreds of thousands of devotees, hundreds of temples are, you know, ISKCON temples. So I think it's all part of Krishna's arrangement. The other thing I think sometimes is that maybe that's the people in India kind of took it for granted. Yes, we know Krishna, we know Bhagavad Gita. You know, in other words, here's another holy man, we see lots of holy men. You know, maybe sort of took it for granted and didn't really realize how special Prabhupada really was. Well, in America, wow, this was like, you know, really exciting. I mean, Prabhupada stood out so differently from everyone else. Here was a person who was just so spiritual and so totally dedicated, and you just felt, you know, the spiritual energy and love and everything from him. I don't know, there's probably a lot of reasons, explanation, that Sugita won't tell us.
I was going to say that isn't part of it also like Dhammaratika Moksha, so, you know,
there was a great population of youth who really quickly gone through that whole thing, and they were just looking for something else, and they weren't looking for economic development. They had sense gratification.
The historical time is right.
Right, and I think Srila Bhaktisiddhanta even said to Prabhupada, you should go to the West because there's people there who are ready for this.
And it's really true. I mean, many of us who were, you know, middle class, educated, good families like that, we weren't interested. We just kind of gave up. We weren't very interested in material life, and we were looking for something different. And Prabhupada came in and tapped in on that, the hippies and everyone else, and they're the ones who flocked to become devotees. There was already a little bit of renunciation, usually misguided. Sometimes it took the form of taking drugs and things, but, you know, there was initial some idea of renunciation or knowing there was something more than the material world. So the historical time is right. There was a lot of dissension, the Vietnam War and everything. Prabhupada was right there in the middle of it. So, yeah, it was good. We've got a couple questions here from the Internet. The last one? Oh, today. Is spiritual advancement possible only in the material world? Do those in Vaikuntha planets want to go higher? Yeah, that's a good question. Prabhupada said that although we have a spiritual identity, that one can advance in rasas. Prabhupada said that once. It doesn't happen a lot, but one can. And I remember from the descriptions in Brihadbhagavatamrita Vaikuntha that sometimes people do change or have another desire to, you know, do something more. So, yeah, I mean, most people are situated constitutionally where they want to be, but if that desire is there, yeah, apparently they can change. Gopakumari, well, he made all kinds of, he changed the form. Although, actually, he kept his cowboy form all the time, right? Every place he went, they said, oh, you should take on a four-arm form. Not a big deal. He says, no, I just want to be a cowboy. Or a demigod, or whatever it was. Yeah. Okay, anyway, here's another one. We're going to have to go there and find out. Thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.